On September 4th, 1975, during my first autumn as a birder, while Russ and I were visiting his parents in Port Wing, Wisconsin, we took a drive to the Apostle Islands National Seashore and made a stop at a lovely spot called Sand Point. A cool little American redstart, the first one I ever found on my own rather than in my ornithology class that summer, flared its tail, and I was utterly charmed. I'd seen my lifer sanderlings on the quarry beach in Port Wing that very morning, and now here was another small flock of sanderlings on a different lovely sandy beach. And there was somebody else, a bird that I did not recognize, so I had to page through my field guide, my hands trembling a bit because I was always nervous that an exciting bird would fly away before I'd figured out who it was, which had happened a lot that spring with warblers. But this time, the lone little bird stayed nice and close as I went back and forth, looking at it through my trusty Bushnell 7x50s and poring through my trusty Golden Guide until I came to the very last page where I finally found a match. This was my lifer Lapland Longspur. At that time, longspurs were classified within what was then the largest family of North American birds, Fringillidae, which contained all our native grosbeaks, finches, sparrows, and buntings. Since then, birds in that family have been reclassified several times. For a while, the snow bunting and all four longspurs were placed in the family Emberizidae with our sparrows, but now they comprise their own family, Calcareidae. That name is related to calcareous, the generic name for the Lapland, chestnut-collared, and Smith's longspurs, which comes from the Latin for spurs. Before I started birding, I never imagined that anything could be called a longspur, but I could see in person how this bird got its name. The claw on its hind toe is unusually long for a songbird. Oddly enough, in all the 50 years since then, I've not seen that long claw very often, at least not with my eyes, in person. I have several photos showing it, but they came about because I was shooting on burst mode, my camera capturing the subtle feature when my eyes could not. My lifer was so wonderfully cooperative that the sight of that bird's long claw is firmly embedded in my brain. I've never been to Finland, so I've never been witness to the reason behind the rest of the Lapland longspur's name, but this hardy little songbird's breeding grounds are hardly restricted to Lapland. It breeds across vast areas of the Arctic in northernmost North America and Eurasia. Longspurs molt their feathers in late summer before migrating, so even though their breeding plumage is spectacular, virtually all the Lapland longspurs I've ever seen have been in duller, more sparrow-like plumage. By April, the edges of their body feathers have worn away enough to start revealing the striking base pattern, but autumn and winter are when I usually see them. That deficiency ended in June 2022 when Russ and I went to Nome. I don't think Russ had seen any Lapland longspur since that very first one in 1975, so his experiences with the species have been 100% high-quality looks. In 1979, long before I was taking bird photos, the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance, then called Madison Audubon, sent me to a National Audubon Convention in Estes Park, Colorado, and I signed up for an all-day field trip to the spectacular Pawnee National Grasslands. That's where I saw my next two lifer longspurs, both in stunning breeding plumage, the thick-billed, then called McCown's, and chestnut-collared longspurs. Since then, I've seen thick-bills in Duluth once at Erie Pier in May 2000 and in Colorado on a tour led by Kim Eckert in April during my big year in 2013. I got a couple of photos of the Colorado one in a snowstorm. Based on the pictures in my field guides, something about the chestnut-collared longspur made it my favorite, but the only other time I ever saw one until just this past weekend was on Kim Eckert's Colorado field trip in 2013. It was in breeding plumage, but too far away in terrible weather for me to appreciate its beauty or to get photos. I got my Lifer Smith's longspur in 2006 when my friend Paula Lozano and I spent January in Arkansas dreaming of ivory-billed woodpeckers. We took time out from that mission to go to the Stuttgart Municipal Airport, which is one of the only places Smith's longspur can be reliably and pretty easily found in winter. When we parked and walked into the airport building, a guy came up and asked if we were looking for the bird. He reminded us to get off the runway if we saw a plane coming in for a landing or getting ready to take off, told us good luck, and voila! Since then, I've seen Smith's longspurs twice, in Duluth at the old Stella Jones Pier in October 2017 and at the McQuaid Small Boat Landing in September 2020. That was during the pandemic, barely a month after Walter was born when he was living with us, so I wore a mask and could not get close to other birders, but that bird was exceptionally cooperative. I've never seen a Smith's longspur in breeding plumage. This species is famous for being exuberantly promiscuous, each female mating with two or three males to produce her single clutch of eggs, while each male mates with two or more females. Some people think that suggests a kind of irresponsible wantonness, but not only does each female take responsibility for the care of her own eggs and chicks, the males apparently take equal responsibility, as many as three different males feeding the young in each nest. Anyway, that's my history with longspurs right up until 3 days ago, but that's another story. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.